to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
Segment of our show is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Mark Rosner will be telling us a little bit about his work with TDC. So what can you tell me about your work with Jay Stoyan and TDC?
Well, TDC, Jay, they're an amazing support system for veterans, disabilities, people with disabilities, and also they've gone into a lot of just supportive initiatives for artists, musicians, that kind of thing as well. And so I would say a very good force in the world of just trying to make people's lives better in multiple different areas. I hope that, I know it's general, but they are. They really get into helping a lot of people that need help.
So, how did you get involved with the organization?
Well, I've known Jay for about 12 years, and we connected about 3 years ago and started talking about how we could be supportive. First of all, we had to learn what each other does and whatnot, more specifically. And then I began supporting the disability channel and vice versa. When we found out more about what each other does, because there is synergy there, although we do different things, there's a desire to help people and to make the world a better place. So we both collaborate with each other's businesses on many different, multi-different areas, sponsorships and nonprofits and all of that.
So you yourself being involved in the music side of things, do you find that providing support for veterans, people with mental health issues, people with various disabilities, and through music is kind of a cool, more relatable way of getting the message across?
Yeah. I find that, you know, I guess the collaborative areas, I guess there's people in the world, I fit into this category, that want to do something. We're doing okay in our lives, and we feel, you know, the old thing of paying it forward. And how do we do that? So many causes in the world and whatnot. So I try to, personally with Big Records, I try to involve us in as many of those as possible. And you know, because we do have a choice in this world, we can change it to some degree, but we can change our own world. Things that are easily accessible to us. We can start there. And I find that when you do that, it grows and there becomes more, you know, areas that you can help in and whatnot. And so, this is the road that I started down with TDC. And that's how, you know, and of course TDC, you know, and musicians are, they need a place and a voice to put things out there. But what I always teach people who start to work with the record label about giving back. It's such a big part of this world. And it's a very simple, you know, some people might call it karma, right? There's different ways of looking at it. The more good things you put out there, the more that comes back. The more bad things you put out, you know, you get that in return. So that's, I think, a simple, even a business concept that works.
So it's interesting that you mentioned you like to give to a number of causes. I always see disability as a thread that weaves through every population, so effectively, no matter what group you're supporting, in some way it gives back to the disability community.
I like that. And as a matter of fact, if I may, we have a television show called Rise Up. We've been working towards this for close to 6 or 7 years, and we've been all over the world, taking veterans to places to do. We took Fraser Newcomb to Utah Beach last year in France. Bang, he's a veteran. He's 84. Bang, his music on Utah Beach, and that was really powerful. And our program, our TV program, it's based on musicians traveling together in a class and going to unique places and together doing shows. But Rise Up in general, it started with the logo, of course, is a hand holding a microphone coming up out of the rubble, like the old music business. And so it went on from there to your point. Rise Up became actually rising up out of whatever your circumstances are. And this is something that's worldwide. You talk about disabilities and whatnot. Like, everybody around the world can relate in some degree to rising above, either not rising above and drowning and sinking, or seeking to rise above whatever circumstance might be holding them back. So it does get into a more general sense, and this also leads into a television show, live show, that's, I guess, modeled a little bit after a show like American Idol. We're doing, next November, 2026, we're doing a show called The Next Big Thing, and that's going to be in New York. It's going to be a live show filmed, and it's going to incorporate musicians, television and film makers, AI content, which is really cool, and dance and fashion. And it's going to be an award show. So the purpose is of getting the message, whether it's your music or whatever you do, out to the entire world, and then having an award show for the content creators for the next year in New York. So that's how, you know, your point about disability, it becomes, you know, it has far-reaching effects, and it gets into, because there's physical disabilities, there's mental disabilities. There's a lot of people facing many things that we don't even understand. Whatever that is, rising above is the idea. We're trying to promote that. We really have two choices, don't we? We have three, I suppose. We can be, we can try to make things better in the world, in our world. We can not care and let things go, or be indifferent, right in the middle. And so I think what this is about is being proactive with your music, but also in life. So that's a quick explanation of Rise Up, the television show, as well as the big finale, Next Big Thing, in New York next November.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, sounds good.
Thanks. This next segment is also a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Susanna Breyer will be telling us a little bit about the Yang Tan Institute. So what can you tell me about the Institute's work on disabilities and employment?
We are an institute of 62 individuals that is seated in the School of Industrial and Labor Relations at Cornell University, which is the College for the Workplace. We go by the acronym, the ILR School, which has been at Cornell for 80 years now. And there has been a disability component of work that has threaded since the 1960s in the ILR School's work. Our own institute does research, training for a whole host of stakeholders, technical assistance, and provides online informational assets of a wide variety. Our target audiences are employers, government officials, policymakers, schools, individuals with disabilities, advocacy organizations, service providers. So we try to disseminate information in what will be accessible formats to a wide host of people who are interested in inclusion in employment and the community more broadly.
So what are some of the key areas of focus?
You know, we realize that disability touches people at all stages of their life. We are focused on employment. So we do look at what are schools doing to prepare young people for the world of work. By legislative mandate, that starts at age 14, although we know people should be looking at career information for youth with disabilities from the start. But we look at the high school years and beyond and looking at how we're effectively preparing youth. So we have quite a cohort of projects and people with expertise in the area of school-to-work transition for youth. We have a significant amount of programming around workplace practices, employer practices that effectively include people more effectively in the recruitment, selection, retention, advancement, accommodation processes. We have a certificate program for service providers on Social Security benefits and how to support people in navigating the benefit system with an interest in helping them get back to work or return to work or get initial work. And we also have a significant cohort of programming research projects for service providers more broadly in state agencies that look at how state agency personnel can work more effectively with community organizations in networking people for jobs and preparation for jobs.
So it's interesting you mentioned about preparation. I'd imagine in your work you encounter some myths or stereotypes about persons with disabilities and their ability to work. Not every employer has the full gamut of information.
You know, indeed, stereotypes and myths about people with disabilities, I think it's probably been always the biggest barrier. Certainly there's been physical barriers to access to work, and barriers now in the technology realm that make it more difficult for people to access job applications. But it is indeed the myths and stereotypes about the competencies, the abilities of people with disabilities, I think they continue to be the biggest barrier and why education and exposure is critically important to break down some of those stereotypes that present barriers for people.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the Institute supporting folks with disabilities, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
You know, I feel like we have seen incremental gains. You know, we've been at this for many, many years now, and I do think there's significant gains. There's a very robust service delivery structure out there. There are over 80 state agencies that have been a part of a federal-state partnership for many, many years. That system serves over 300,000 people, has about 30,000 employees. So the community service structure is there in support of those organizations. Are thousands of community service providers that provide not only support in employment, which is where we are focused and happy to see many, many service providers in that area, but also in housing and transportation and all the other service structures that really are critical for making employment work. Along with that, I would say we've seen a concerted change since the 1990 ADA employment provisions were put into effect in the private sector, in more employers really proactively trying to engage people with disabilities, particularly when there has been, a very low unemployment rate. We see employers being much more open to providing the support people need to get into the workplace and to keep them there. And that has certainly been incrementally better over the 35 years. We see many more employers proactively trying to engage people and many associations that support those employers in this process.
So if you could see anything added to the current landscape to support more people with disabilities getting into the workforce, what would it be?
You know, Kim, I think private public partnerships are really critical. There are many industries that can't fill their jobs, and many people who are eager to get jobs and really should have an opportunity for jobs that are not only entry-level, although they can be a great way to get started and get some job experience and fill out your resume, but get an opportunity to get on a career trajectory that offers long-term opportunities for good salaries, for advancement, for an enhancement of skills in response to industry changes and challenges over time. And I think that public-private partnerships are the best way for us to assure that that kind of trajectory and career opportunities happens. That can be internships that are co-supported by employers and local regional economic development systems, apprenticeships, skill-building opportunities with vocational training schools or community colleges. We see that in the United States. I think we need a funnel for getting people skilled up to fill jobs that we know are currently available and or will be available in the next 6 months, 2 to 3 years. That's going to be our best opportunity to make changes in the employment for people with disabilities that have enduring gains.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Happy to do so.
Thanks. Andy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Blood donors are needed now as much as ever. If you would like to help meet the needs of patients across Canada, please consider booking an appointment by calling 1-800-2-DONATE. That is 1-800-236-6283, or by visiting blood.ca or through the Give Blood app. The Windsor Blood Donation Centre location is at 3909 Grand Maris Road East. Make a difference with the Canadian Blood Services.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Mark Rosner told us about his experiences with TDC, and Susanna Bayer told us a little bit about the Yang Tan Institute. In this segment of our show, Dexter Thomas and Brian Carlson will be telling us a little bit about Christian Record.
Well, I'll get started then. My name is Brian Carlson. I'm the Director of Communication here at Christian Record. And with me today is our president, Dexter Thomas, and he has just recently been hired, just starting off his tenure here, and we're excited to have him on as far as our ministry goes. And Dexter, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I've been a Christian Record Services for the Blind is a 126-year-old organization. We are headquartered in Lincoln, Nebraska, in the middle of the country. I have been around the organization for probably the last 30 years. I'm from the island of Trinidad and Tobago, and they used to send me faith-based materials, really inspirational books in Braille and audio. And then when I went to college in Huntsville, Alabama, they even gave me a $500 scholarship to help towards my tuition. And then I've been on the board. So that's the history. We run camps for blind adults and children. We have a line called Phone Faith where people call for support, inspiration, and just a sense of a place of belonging. And we also provide faith-based materials, like I mentioned earlier, in Braille, large print, audio. All that good stuff, Cameron.
So what are some of the key advantages to someone with a vision impairment being able to access the materials and be a part of a faith community?
It does a couple of things. Especially for, like, one of our new initiatives is dealing with what we've been calling the quiet crisis. We notice there are 8 million Americans suffering from some form of an eye disease. And a lot of them, like, those who might be attending a faith-based group they are no longer able to read the songbooks or their Bible in regular print or see the PowerPoint presentations, and they're kind of withdrawing, you know, they're silently removing themselves from life. So what we do is we provide tools to basically say to them, hey, you could still live a rich, full life even with diminished or no sight. That is not, don't make that an obstacle. So some of those tools would be, you know, like the community on phone faith, you know, just a call away where there are people who would provide support and a place where they can share the sadness and the grief of losing sight. But then they themselves would then be so equipped and empowered that they would turn around and provide the same support to other people who are losing their vision. So what we provide, Cameron, is a sense of, like I said, community, where everybody knows your name, right? And they're always glad you came. We provide materials that people could access. And then even with our camps, we provide experiences that generally the visually challenged and the blind do not get to participate in: horseback riding, rock climbing, you know, zip lining, you know, all these fun activities, so that they feel like they not only belong, but they are part of.
So I'm very curious about the accessible adventure stuff you mentioned there, things like zip lining, rock climbing. How do you modify these activities so someone with vision loss can do it?
Brian, that's you.
Yeah. I obviously depends on the activity. Usually with horseback riding, you know, we have about 6 to 8 different camps every summer that have campers come in. And again, those camp experiences are fully paid for by our organization as long as the camper is able to get themselves travel-wise to those locations. But with horseback riding, usually it has somebody who is guiding the horse or riding the horse right next to them. With climbing, like with a climbing wall or with rock climbing, you're already connected into a rope. And so you're harnessed in. And so you can reach, and once in a while there'll be a visual guide at the bottom telling the next hand holds up to your right a little bit, reach for that one, et cetera. But they really love doing that. Zip line is a very similar experience. You're connected into a harness. You get up there in the heights, and they're probably not as scared of heights as I am because they can't see how high they are starting, and can just take off. And there's other experiences, though, because many of our campers may not have been blind their entire lives, or they may still have some low vision. So we have some campers who are almost completely blind, but they grew up with vision, so they'll actually get back behind a boat and they'll still water ski, even though they can't see. They can hold the rope and get their skis in front of them, and then boat driver can say, "All right, go," you know, and they can get up there and ski just like they normally would when they had sight. And so, depends on the level of sight of the person, but there's a lot of different things that can still be done. When we do archery, we will put balloons on the targets so that if the arrow hits the target, they'll hear the balloon pop. And usually there's a sighted guide that's there kind of helping them with their aim and saying, okay, we're going to shoot the arrow in this direction, etc.
You know, it's funny you're talking about being not a fan. So Cameron, I am totally blind. Probably lost all the useful sight I had about 5 years ago. I was born legally blind. But I went skydiving about 15 years ago, and my friends were like, "Man, weren't you afraid of the height?" I'm like, "For what? You need to see to be afraid of height." But however, though, when I jumped out that plane, I'm like, "Who in the world talked me into this mess?" It scared the dickens out of me.
So when you went skydiving, was there any sort of modified instruction as to how to do the jump or had to open the parachute or anything along those lines?
No, sir. A guy was strapped to my back, and he told me jump, and I followed like a fool, and I jumped.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Friends, I'm just going to come out and say it. Dexter's experiences as a blind skydiver speak to the potential folks with disabilities, the unlimited adaptability of humanity, the fact that you can take something that most people with full use of their sight wouldn't do and adapt it in such a way that a person with a disability would take the chance and get that experience. I've said many times, disability life is not about limitations. It is about adapting your thinking. It is about taking the way things are done and asking, how can I make this work for me? Is there a way that this can be modified for someone with my unique skills and my gifts? And if the answer is yes, which almost always it is, then take a chance. Explore. Try something new before you decide it can't be done. Fact is, it's easy for society to look and say, there's no way to do this. Sometimes, for a person with a disability, that gets set in stone where it doesn't have to be. For we are stronger and more potentialed than it appears on first glance. Disability life can also be an exploration, one's own potentials, and, in a sense, how to change the world. People with disabilities don't necessarily live to inspire or to drive others to do great things in their achievements. But by blazing those trails, by opening those doors, by taking those opportunities, they are carving a path. And once it's been done, you can't ever say it's never been done. You can't say it's impossible. If someone's a living, breathing example of potential and possibility, and that is the great gift of disability life. And the work that Dexter and Brian are doing as well really reaches me, in so much as everyone should have the opportunity to have access to all types of literature. Accessible formats are becoming more common, yes, but it's still a struggle. It's still not the default for most organizations to just say, hey, someday someone with a disability is going to come along. Shouldn't we have a version of this on standby just to make it easier for them? It's always easier to build from the ground up than it is to reinvent the wheel. And it's easy for our leaders to put in place protections and policies for folks with disabilities, but you don't necessarily see enforcement or maintenance of these policies. Everyone says the right things. Oh, I want to be accepting. I want to be inclusive. But putting that into practice takes more than just words. And it takes more than just stagnated thinking. It takes folks with disabilities being asked, what do you need? What would help you? They won't always say, I need X, Y, and Z. But I guarantee you, they will appreciate the consideration and being asked. As I was recently reminded, there is no singular definition of accessibility in the world. It's a matter of perspective. It's a matter of knowing what you need, knowing how to convey that information, and knowing what your rights and your protections are. But we cannot fall back on the idea that our way of doing things and our way of thinking is the only way of thinking, the only way to get the job done. Disability life, like any group in society, is about pushing forward. It's about making the change toward equality. And you're not going to get there in a day, but you can take a step every day in that direction. You can create something new and something better for your fellow human beings every day of your life. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Please, yes, cheese, please, you're so fine.
You want to listen all the time. Snarf, Dude, and Daffodil spin their hits. It's all cheesy music. They love it to bits. Well, Snarf, Dude is the man in the band. Fine and cheesy music is his only plan. Daffodil is sugar, but she's also spice. She might be saucy, but she can be pretty nice. All the cheesy music, they can scrounge. You'll hear the favorites in the Limburger Lounge. Playing all
all that is wacky, warped, and weird. Cool and cheesy music is not to be feared. Celebrity slip-ups, polka, and more. There's even the stuff on the cutting room floor. There's weird instrumentals, people singing flat. So you know why we wanna play that.